Hey, everybody. If you are listening to this, you are listening on the free feed. And if you're listening on the free feed, you're getting a truncated episode of this Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny episode. The episode, as we recorded it for the Patreon, subbeacon.com, ran super long. So long, we didn't have time to tape a bonus episode. And as a result, I didn't think it was fair to put this episode out for free on the iTunes feed. So if you want to listen to the whole episode with all the dudes chatting, there's like 40 minutes of dudes chat and I cut out, maybe 35 minutes of dudes chat and I cut out. You got to go over to the Patreon and sign up there. It's subbeacon.com. Listen there. It's good episode, fun episode, a very long episode. You're getting a short truncated version of the episode here. So go sign up. You'll be able to hear all our episodes when they come out. It'll be better that way. Everyone's happier that way. Everyone's happier that way.
Give them hell, Indiana Jones!
A few times in my life, I've seen things.
I've been tortured with voodoo. Been shot 9 times. Including once by your father.
Sorry!
But I've been looking for this all my life.
Welcome to the Sub Beacon Podcast. I am your co-host, Mike Warren, and with me, as always, are my two co-hosts who are in it for fortune and glory, Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch. We're going to be talking a little bit later in the show about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. But first, head over to subbeacon.com to become a patron of the podcast. You can become a part of the community. Comment. Listen, of course, as soon as the show is out. When we do bonus episodes, you can hear those bonus episodes if you are a patron at subbeacon.com. We'll get into the movie of the week, but first, let's hear how our weeks have been going. Shall we move on? I think so.
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, the number one movie at the box office.
That is good. It is great to capture the number one spot, Michael.
It's number one. It's number one. It's there's no higher you can go, right? Number one, it's $60 million in the first debut weekend. Is that good, Sonny? Is that good, JVL? $60 million?
It's better than The Flash.
Which, by the way, dropped to number eight.
Look, here's not good. Here's, you know, what do we always say about box office? The latest movie in a series is not getting judged on its own merits, getting judged on the last, right? And so This movie comes out, 15 years after Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which was notoriously not well liked, I think, by audiences and critics.
But made money.
But made a lot of, so that movie did 750, something like that, somewhere between
did
750.
It really?
Yeah. Somewhere between 750 and 800 million worldwide, if I remember.
I had totally
correctly.
Forgotten that.
Huge, it did huge numbers. Did huge numbers. So this movie is opened up to 130 million worldwide over the 3-day. You know, how good is that? That's not good. It's bad. Because this movie cost, depending on who you're listening to, this movie cost anywhere from $200 million to $350 million before advertising.
See every dollar on the screen.
You can see every penny on the screen. You see it all up there. So this, you know, a $60 million 3-day weekend, even if it does something insane like legs out to $250 million, which would be a multiple of 4, you know, I guess that's possible. It doesn't strike me as particularly likely, but even if it did that, even if it legged out to 250 million domestic, and even if that was only 1/3 of the eventual worldwide run and it got to 750 million domestic, I mean, this is a movie that had to gross, this is another one of these movies that had to gross $1 billion because it was so expensive, because it was an enormously expensive movie. And I, like, you know, I very rarely, let me qualify that, I very rarely cheer against a movie, It's very rare that I want movies to fail, and I don't even want this movie to fail precisely. But I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to have a bunch of these $300 million movies lose nine figures for their studios, yep. because they all have the same problem, which is that they all look bad. None of them looks good. And you know, I tweeted something about this over the week, but the only person in Hollywood right now who should be given $300 million to make a movie is James Cameron. Because when James Cameron is given $300 million to make a movie, he works those Weta guys to death at $5 an hour Australian or whatever they're making. And he gets every single penny of that $300 million and it's all up on the screen.
Also Tom Cruise.
No, I don't.
Tom Cruise should also get.
No, I don't think so. So Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, I think, cost something like $290 million. $290 million, something like that. Now, again,
is that part one?
That's just part one. So look, again, we're dealing with a very weird time in which there are massive overruns that have to do with COVID, productions getting shut down, huge testing regimes, shortened filming days, whatever. Like there are reasons that the movies cost more money right now. But, you know, at $290 million for a Mission Impossible movie, that means that with advertising, they're all in at about $500 million. You gotta make $1 billion to make your money back. That can happen. I'm not saying it's impossible for it to happen. But you know what the rest of the Mission Impossible movies have made? Kind of a very steadily in, like, ever since bombing out with the third one, which again was a response to the second one, it has kind of ticked up and up, and it is now making between $700 and $800 million a movie. That's a lot of money for a movie. Most people would take $800 million and be like, that's great. $800 million does not get you to break even on a $290 million budget. It just doesn't.
Question.
Yeah.
Could there be some benefit to Disney, going back to Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, some benefit to Disney that this movie advertises the franchise to a new generation? So we're thinking of it in terms of what kids, what Gen Zers know Indiana Jones, but to play devil's advocate here, could this be like advertising it so that kids look into all the other Indiana Jones movies, which are on Disney Plus, and hey, they'll get a subscription to Disney Plus, and maybe they'll go to Disney World, to Hollywood Studios, where the live show is still, you know, I mean, is that crazy? Does that make
no
sense?
Or set up Helena Baz, and the Raiders of the Next Generation Indiana Jones. See, really, because what this is it soft launches the next sequel.
Yeah.
I mean, I
don't know, man.
Why not just get Daisy Ridley?
It's possible, I guess. I don't know. It's possible. Anything's possible.
Okay, so the answer is no. All right, let's just move beyond this depressing box office talk. And can you give us a big boy review of Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny? Even the title sounds stupid. Sonny, give us a big boy.
Spoilers ahead. So if you
spoilers,
if you're worried about being spoiled for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, log off now. All right. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Harrison Ford is back and he's young again. We start the movie in 1944.
Five?
1944, 45. The Hitler, I think, is just about
Hitler's
ready. Hitler's in his bunker.
He hasn't
shot himself just yet, but Hitler really wants the Spear of Destiny. Some Nazis in a castle think they found it. Turns out it's a fake, but they got something else. The Greek thing. It's got a name. Arithakairos or something.
Akronikonos.
They got the Akronikonos. And now that they have the Akronikonos.
That's Greek for MacGuffin, by the way.
Now that they have the Akronikonos, Mads Mikkelsen can correct Hitler's mistakes. But Indy steals the Akronikonos And that's the end of the prelude. Flash forward to 1969 or so. The United States has gone to the moon. The Beatles are playing on the radio. And Indiana Jones is sad and alone in his sad, alone apartment where he lives by himself because his son has been poochied back to... Marianne has decided to leave him because she's so sad about her son being killed in the war. He's killed in the war. He's a war hero. There's actually the I will give praise to this movie. There's actually a very nice shot in the opening moments there where the camera kind of pans around the room and you see a flag folded into a triangle. It's obviously a funeral flag. You see Mutt's picture, and that's right next to Indiana Jones's dad, Sean Connery. It's right next to his picture. And that tells the whole little story of what has happened here. He's died in a war, either Korea or Vietnam. Hard to say. I guess it must be Vietnam.
And you need that scene, because otherwise you have to wait 20 whole minutes for Indiana Jones to give all of that exposition explicitly.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway. In case the audience is just fucking bunch of mouth-breathing morons.
Well, they are. They are, which is why you have to give them the exposition. But it's a nice little shot. It's visual storytelling. You love to see it sometimes. Indy is being retired. He's at the age where he's no longer allowed to teach. So he's retiring. His goddaughter, Helena, who's played by Phoebe Waller-Bridges, shows up, and she's like, hey, I need the Akinakinos. You didn't destroy it like you told my dad, did you? And Indy's like, no, let's go look at the Akinakinos. And then turns out Mads Mikkelsen still wants it because he wants to correct all of Hitler's mistakes. And then they have to find the second half of the Akinakinos. All right, so let me just stop you here, because all of this is fine. Fine. It's indie stuff. You know, you going around the world, you're trying to find things, you're putting them together. There's chases and streets, blah, blah, blah. Can I just say that I
put the slinky down. You're very upset and agitated, and I don't want you to break it by accident.
The thing that I find confusing about this film is that every single chase sequence in this movie looks worse than every other chase sequence than has been filmed in the series before it. And I can't tell, maybe you guys disagree with me about this, but I can't tell if we are regressing. We are simply regressing as filmmakers, film lovers, film watchers, in the fine art of the automobile chase, because it's something I noticed in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull as well. Every time you have a close-up shot in the jungle chase in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, every time you're within the Jeep looking out, everything looks fake as shit all around. Just awful, fake, garbage-looking CGI, green screen, rear projection stuff. But when you cut to a shot that's actually outside of the Jeep, where you're shooting from the rear, and obviously it's the stunt doubles inside driving it, it looks real because they're actually driving somewhere. They're actually driving. And the same exact thing is happening in this movie. Anytime through the streets of, Casablanca, or wherever they are, Morocco.
Tangier.
All of the shots from within the little motorbike stand that they have that they're driving around look fake as hell. Just absolute garbage rear projection technology, like we're in 1930 something. And when you look at it from the outside, when you see them from behind, it all looks very real because they're actually driving through streets. There's somebody actually driving through the streets somewhere. But and you compare this to Raiders of the Lost Ark. Compare this to Raiders of the Lost Ark, which has this like vibrant immediacy because Indiana Jones is always there. He's always there in the street, driving around. He's jumping in through windows. He's going under trucks. Like somebody is there all the time. It just looks so much better. And I can't tell if this is just function of safety or whatever, but it looks terrible now. It looks terrible. And all of the supposedly exciting adventure and chase and action sequences, this brings me to my point, all look terrible and fake and phony and bad. And it's one thing to have the dumb MacGuffin, because you could argue, well, you know, the Ark of the Covenant is a dumb MacGuffin. That movie ends with the power of God melting faces off. That's so dumb. But when the dumb MacGuffin in this movie is, we're going to go back in time, and we wound up in ancient Greece for some reason, because Archimedes, the 2,500-year-old mathematician whose biggest achievement was being like, when I get in a tub, water comes out, figured out the mysteries of time travel through energies in the sky. When that's your MacGuffin,
I wish you guys could see Sonny, because he looks like he's having a stroke.
when that's your MacGuffin, the rest of the movie has to be very, very good. The rest of the movie has to be great. And the rest of this movie is not great. The rest of this movie is very bad. It's bad. The only reason I don't hate this movie, is because I do find Harrison Ford to be deeply charming and entertaining as Indiana Jones. I thought Phoebe Waller-Bridge is very good as the lady sidekick. She has this kind of smarmy British thing going on that I find very appealing and amusing. But fuck me, the real problem with this movie is that it's just a slog. It's so long. Yes. It's so long. It's 2.5 hours long. It's 20 minutes longer than any other Indiana Jones movie. And I wouldn't say I was bored exactly, but I was frequently like, got to get to the fireworks factory to bring it back to Poochie. We got to get to the fireworks factory here, folks. And we're not getting to the fireworks factory fast enough. And then when we got to the fireworks factory, it turned out to be the dumbest shit I've ever seen. So that's my review of this movie.
How did you like the new Short Round? He hit
Short Round via McGreb.
I thought he was
fine. The new Short Round, who has a little mustache, so he's not a kid sidekick anymore. He's a tween sidekick.
Look, here's the thing. The new Short Round, was fine, but again, they do this weird thing in the movie where, like, new Short Round is angry because kids are making fun of him for wearing a straw hat. Like, do you remember the scene? The kids,
yes.
So, like, we cut at one point to... We cut to new Short Round. He's jealously watching these children eat ice cream or something. And one of the kids just out of nowhere is like, look at that fucking idiot's straw hat. Look at that dumb shit. He's a fucking retard.
He must be poor.
And it's like, it's just like, do people talk that way? Is this how humans behave? Ever? I guess probably somewhere somebody did that. But it's just, again, it's a dumb thing in a dumb movie.
Is this a hint that maybe AI wrote part of this script?
I don't understand what you're getting at.
I'm just saying. I mean, if there's...
No, AI didn't write the script. You know who wrote the script is 17 executives at Lucasfilm who were like, we gotta ensure that everybody understands that, you know, inequality is bad or whatever. I don't know, man. I didn't care for this movie, and it kind of made me upset. A lot of things about it made me upset. But the overarching dumbness of it, I think, is what upset me the most. You know what? The other thing that upset me about I'm sorry, I'm rambling here. But the last thing that really bugged me was that, and this isn't James Mangold's fault. You know what? Who James Mangold is not? James Mangold is not Steven Spielberg. He doesn't have the same intuitive grasp of movement and camera position and framing and shot selection. He just is not as good of a filmmaker. And whatever else you want to say about the other Indiana Jones movies, which all Raiders of the Lost Ark is perfect and Last Crusade is almost perfect. Temple of Doom has a lot of really great sequences. Even Kingdom of the Crystal Skull has like a very solid sense of movement and place and understands what it's doing. This movie, the camera just sits there for so much of it. Perfect example. One last example, and I'll shut the fuck up. In Temple of Doom, there's this great expedition dump scene that takes place in a big banquet, right? It's the banquet in the Indian palace, and they have all the disgusting foods, and it's very funny because the other characters.
Chilled monkey brains.
Because you know, Indy's having this serious chat with the Maharaja Rupee, whatever.
Prime Minister.
Having a very, very, you know, important and deep chat about, you know, cultural norms, whatever. And it's very funny because on then, you know, the lady and Short Round
Millie
are like,
Scott,
look at these disgusting foods. Ah, it's very... And the camera's moving all around. It's not boring. It's not dull. There's visual stuff happening. You get the same exact scene in this movie where they're talking about the Dial of Destiny, the Akadakanakados. And it's just one shot, two shot in a bar. It's just one. Here's Indy talking. Here's Goddaughter talking. Indy, Goddaughter, Indy, Goddaughter. Just back and forth. Cut. A shot, two shot, A shot, two shot. And I was just like, this is boring. I'm bored. I'm bored. I'm as bored as everybody listening to Sunny right now.
Thank you, Sunny.
I hated it more. Yeah. I hated it more. And I, my hatred, which is very visceral, is for a deeper thematic reason. Everything Sunny said is correct. All of the flaws of it, you know, qua film are that is correct. The problems with how it looks, the problem. Here's what I don't like. What is Indiana Jones? Indiana Jones was a return to fun and adventure, right? This is Indiana Jones is the pulp stuff that we all loved growing up, right? This was literally Lucas and Spielberg's inspiration for it, right?
The serial films, yep.
The serial films that we all love. And here we are in the valedictory Indiana Jones installment. And we are told that Indiana Jones, who has lived this fantastic life of adventure, who is the world's most interesting man, is nothing but a sad sack. Look at him. He is a cranky old man living in his crappy New York apartment in his boxer shorts. And his wife left him, and he's sad, and he sucks at teaching, and his students don't respect him, and he's being shuffled off of his job. He's just a big sad sack. Look at that. Your hero, Indiana Jones, you thought was fun. It turns out he's fucking Willie Loman with a bullwhip. And you know what? I'm fuck you people. Fuck you people trying to tell us that the way our hero spends his golden years, the guy who's like, who's had all these adventures and been, you would think would be a national treasure. You'd think that the CIA would have him on retainer. You think, right? This is somehow the CIA is hunting him down. Doesn't even know when we get CIA people. Don't even know who he is. He put the fucking lost Ark in your warehouse. He put the Ark of the Covenant in your warehouse. I'm sure the CIA knew exactly who Indiana fucking Jones
was. He examined the alien in the Crystal Skull. There's a whole sequence about that.
And the conceit of we're going to take this fun thing, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden at the end, we're going to tell you actually that it's all a sad, sad story and that this guy is basically a loser. And then we'll, you know, at the end, I guess, we'll sort of, you know, redeem him. Like, look, he got out and found fun one last time. Right, and wherever you go, there you are. Blah blah. It feels like people literally pissing all over a beloved character in a way that I had thought only like deconstructionist leftist radicals did to beloved traditional figures from fiction, and I was really, really angry watching the whole fucking movie because of that. Michael?
I mean, what can I say?
You're gonna say, actually, I loved it.
I did love it. No, I'm just kidding. No, I did not hate it, but everything that you guys keep saying makes me hate it. You know what I mean? Like, I walked out of the theater I was bored with it. I didn't love it. There were parts of it that I liked, and what I came out of the theater thinking was like, I could have trimmed that movie down and it would have been a fun movie. All the problems that Sonny mentioned about the way it looked, I agree with. I actually thought, I've been reading a little bit that people seem to like the de-aging of Harrison Ford in the first part. I hated it. I thought it looked bad from the beginning. I thought they were hiding it with shadows.
No. Here's what you were actually saying. It looked fine. It sounded
wrong. Totally agree. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Old man.
It had old man Harrison Ford. Voice.
Also, old man voice. He moved like old man Harrison Ford.
Yes,
there was
that's what I'm saying. Yes.
Where there were not in every shot, but there were shots in which it was like Robert De Niro in The Irishman, where like all of a sudden, oh, I'm sorry, he's moving like an old man. And you know, like Godzilla, this fucking, why is that entire sequence shot at night on a train? Because it looks like shit, and they were trying to hide how shitty it looked.
Well, and all it made me think of was Kid Indy in the beginning of Last Crusade. It made me think of, that's the other thing. The movie doesn't sort of like indulge too many member berries, except that like all it made me do was think about all the better movies in the Indiana Jones, you know, series, like just
there are only two better movies.
Well, so my
the series basically sucks.
My favorite is actually Temple of Doom. So put that in your
Temple of Doom is great.
I love Temple of Doom. And guess what?
All three of those movies are great.
I totally agree with you, Sonny. More than half of the things that everybody loves about Indiana Jones are from Temple of Doom. They are. They simply are. It's the grabbing the hat, like half of the catchphrases. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So this movie, a couple of other complaints. Okay, I actually liked the thing at the end. It wasn't in Greece, by the way. It was they were on the Isle of Sicily, Syracuse.
Oh, whatever.
That's where they were. I kind of like that because
his people keep track of these things, Sonny.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We know where the Sicilians are at all times.
I kind of like that. I thought it was like
real
as far as
shit.
As far as twists go, or sort of like, I liked the way it felt like old Indiana Jones in a good way, where he's like figuring out how they fucked it up. And you know, where he's like, you know, continental drift. They haven't considered continental drift.
None of this makes any sense. None of this makes any sense because as once we get to Sicily, and we learn that the Akinakinakinos was designed from the start to trick people to come back to Greece to help Archimedes defeat the Romans. How does that work? Once again, I'm begging somebody to explain to me how the bathtub water guy was like, we need the coordinates.
He also came up with the screw.
Arc of the sun.
Archimedes screw.
I'm sorry. Ridiculous.
Is that the name of one of your softball teams in your league?
Ridiculous.
The Archimedes screw.
So a couple other things. Okay. But regardless, a couple other things I hated. The CIA agent, right? Or she was CIA or FBI. Yeah. Like the most pointless character.
She gets a lot of screen time for somebody who just gets shot in the gut and dies for no reason and doesn't move the plot along.
And also, like, what purpose does she serve? I start off thinking, oh, like, this is kind of she's an interesting character at first because she looks like the time period. Like, she definitely, like, evokes the most, like, in her fashion, like, the time period that you're in. So you really feel like between that and the Beatles and the moon landing, you're like, okay, we're in a different time period than we've ever seen Indiana Jones before. Cool. Okay. So she sticks out, and yet she doesn't, like, she basically spends the whole time going like, wait, what's happening? I'm not sure about this. Guys, stop shooting. Stop hurting these people. What point does she serve? And then, as you say, JVL, she gets shot in the gut, and then it's over. And, like, what was the point of that character?
That character has no reason to exist.
No reason. It made me mad.
I'm trying to, I've, for the last week or so, I've been trying to parse exactly what Mads Mikkelsen's relationship to the United States government was. I mean, I understand that he's Wernher von Braun, right? I get that. But I'm saying, like, everything else about him where they're like, you should go meet with the president and not do this other thing you want to do. And, like, you should go, like, why was there a CIA? I guess, so she's CIA, but then there was another CIA handler, the guy who was like in the, he had the sling. for some reason. Oh, his arm was in a sling.
Unclear why that dude was even there.
Who was that guy exactly? Right. So once again, when Mike suggests that this was written by an AI, it wasn't. It was written by 17 Lucasfilm executives who were trying to figure out how to make this plot work and also make sure you got to keep that actress in there, because otherwise we have zero black characters in this movie, and that's a real problem. That's a real problem for everyone.
But this is never
Boyd Holbrook, I guess. If I had to say one nice thing about this movie,
he's good.
Boyd Holbrook, who plays a henchman, he doesn't really do much, but his presence on screen is nice.
Well, and then there's also the German menace. There's also the German Jack Reacher. That guy had a good presence because he looked weird. He was just
Olivier
an enormous.
Richters. He's 7'2".
He's an enormous brick shithouse of a man.
But sorry, back up. Like, this has not been a, I mean, you can say that on the black characters in Indiana Jones, like Raiders has a very important key black character. Like, this is not like hard. It's not like you have to shoehorn in diversity necessarily, like into Indiana Jones. You should like actually, it just makes me nothing about this. You're right, Sonny. It's all it's like corporate, moving pieces into the place so that, oh, we can shove this all in. Oh, and I know we'll take, I mean,
you know, along these lines. So we haven't even talked about this at all, but Antonio Banderas is in this movie.
I say this
for like 20 minutes.
The only person who I thought looked like they were having fun in the entire movie is Antonio Banderas.
Yeah.
Well, I think Harrison Ford does as well. But I liked Antonio Banderas in that role a lot. I thought it was a nice little, it was a nice little character turn. It's like a little, it really does feel like a throwback to like Sala.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
But then he gets killed. He gets killed. And then, This is, I think, emblematic of everything that's wrong with the whole movie. They have this whole little adventure. He gets gut shot. He dies. He blows up his boat. And then, as they're speeding away on the boat, Phoebe Waller-Bridge makes a little quip, and Andy turns to her with a sourpuss look on his face and says, "My friend was just murdered." And it's like, well, all right, thanks, Captain Buzzkill. Fucking, like, I know that sucks for you, and that, but like, this whole thing is supposed to be more fun than that. This is
supposed to dwell on those things.
That's not fun.
I mean,
that's
literally
not a fun thing.
In Raiders, there's a moment where, you know, the part where Marion is supposedly blown up, and like, Indy, like when Sala comes to find him, and Indy's like, "Marion's dead," and Sala's like, "I know," and then they just move on because, like, he's just like, "You gotta move."
Can I want to say something about Phoebe Waller-Bridge, because I think her performance is nice, but the character as written is terrible. The character as written is basically a sociopath.
Yeah,
and yet we are expected to be kind of rooting for her because she's young and sassy.
Well, she has an arc. She has an arc.
Yes,
she starts as kind of a B word, and she's still,
no, not a B word, as a sociopath, like somebody who is,
and she's she you know, continues like that for a long time. And then she knocks Indy out.
Magically stops.
She knocks Indy out on the island of Sicily. And when he comes back awake in New York, got back somehow. That's somebody joked about this on Twitter, but that's one of the biggest yada yadas in film history. Like, just showing up, cutting from Sicily in 300 BC or whatever to New York.
Than Bruce Wayne getting out of the pit and then showing up in Gotham.
That's 100% the same thing. Now she's learned her lessons about the importance of it belongs in a museum or whatever.
Ridiculous.
It was a confused character. is what it's like.
Yeah. And again, I think Phoebe Waller-Bridge does her best with the material she has there. Yes.
I actually think she's really good in that role. I think she is, you're right. It's a bad character, but she is charming
she's winning, I think is like a good way.
She's a winning screen presence.
Yes.
But that should have been, the character should have been written again, 70% less psychotic. Right. More sort of Marion-esque.
Yes.
Kind of, she's a broad and she's a tough broad.
Yeah.
And less like this person is an insane person who is just spewing death and destruction around them.
Or like
wantonly.
Or like genuinely desperate. Like she needs to get this thing to sell it for a very specific reason. She has to save somebody or whatever. But like instead it's just like, I was gonna marry this guy and then I didn't. I guess fuck him. But now I owe a lot of people money. I'm gonna sell this thing.
Because also I'm a gambling addict.
I'm an
alcoholic.
And I got
it very clear that she's an alcoholic.
I got this little kid I gotta take care of. He flies airplanes. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Fucking movie. Here's a closing question for us.
Driving crooner there.
Are we finally done with Indiana Jones? Harrison Ford isn't going to do another one,
no.
But is Disney going to shove another Indiana universe movie down our throats, or will the death of this at the box office prevent that? Because that's what I was afraid of. If this movie succeeded, we were going to get Helena then as the new Indiana Jones and get another installment of this bullshit.
Boy, I would. If I could be a fly on any corporate wall, it would be the ones where Bob Iger and his people are trying to figure out what the fuck to do with Lucasfilm. Because that place is a disaster area all around. I mean, like, everything they are doing is bad. Like, it's either bad creatively, or it's bad commercially, or it's just happening. Or it's just not happening. I mean, like, how many Star Wars movies have been announced and then canceled in the last?
They lose less money on the Star Wars movies they don't make.
I mean, that's
the Star Wars movies they make.
Yeah, I mean that's crazy. But I mean, I just don't. You know, the TV shows are between middling and bad. You know, Marvel has its own issues right now, but it still is kind of making decent movies that are making decent money.
Was Lucasfilm doing the Willow show?
Did the Willow show. They got not only canceled after one season, but disappeared from the Disney Plus service because nobody watched it. And, you know, I got into a fight with somebody online who was like, you know, well, I mean, it's just really Willow had all these fans and, you know, they're taking it away. I'm like, if Willow had fans, if that television show had fans, they would not be removing it from the service. You know how many people watch that show? Zero people. Zero people on planet Earth watch that show. Nobody loved it. I can guarantee you nobody loved it. But like, I don't understand what exactly they are going to do with Lucasfilm. The thing that they need to do is the thing that they will never do. Because it would give the bad people a win. It would give the bad people a win. And the thing they need to do is, like, I'm sorry, Kathleen Kennedy's service to her country has been greatly appreciated, and she's produced many great things, but she needs a promotion like yesterday. She needs to be promoted into some higher up role at Disney.
COO Most disastrous film something. Executive in modern history.
No, I mean, look, who could say? Who could say? I certainly wouldn't want to go on that sort of out far on that big of a limb, but they need fresh blood. They need fresh blood in Lucasfilm. That's all I'll say about that.
All right. Any final thoughts on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny? Sonny, JVL?
I will say this. I am okay. I want to amend what I said previously about having another series of Indiana Jones with Phoebe Waller-Bridge as the new Indiana Jones. My objection to that is because this shit sucks. If this movie had been fantastic and we were going to send, like, do another we're going to start it over with the Indiana Jones and the Next Generation, and it's Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character, then I would have been all for it.
Sure.
What, the reason I want this thing put in the ground is because it's so bad, and I don't want any more of it.
Yeah. No, agreed. Yeah. Agreed. But, I mean, here's the... I spent the first 300 words of my review talking about the lack of
the logo,
the lack of the Paramount mountain, right, fading into a thing on the screen, which has been a hallmark of these, the first four indie movies. It doesn't exist here because it can't exist here because Paramount has to be sidelined. This is Disney and Lucasfilm. Disney and Lucasfilm. That's who's in charge now, and. The problem with all of this is that Disney has made a $5 billion investment, $4 billion investment in Lucasfilm, and they got to figure out how to get that money back somehow. They're not getting it back from Star Wars, although maybe the success of The Mandalorian and all the Disney Plus subscriptions that it drove, like, basically paid for itself. They sold
$4 billion worth of Baby Yoda plushies. Yeah.
So maybe it's all worked out. But, like, they have the most valuable thing in the entire world, JBL. What is that? Intellectual property. That's right, Mike Warren. Thank you. I'm sorry.
I think that Star Wars is way overvalued as intellectual property. And I think one of the things we have discovered since the Lucas prequels is that the Star Wars that we thought was the most valuable IP in the history of the world after Return of the Jedi turns out to be much less valuable than anybody thought.
But remember that $4 billion also included Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones, huge IP. You know what? People hear Indiana Jones, they know what that means. It's a fedora, and it's a bullwhip, and it's artifacts, and it's the Wrath of God, and it's Sean Connery.
I've drunk the blood of Kali.
So you have this thing, and it's very valuable. You can't just get rid of it. JBL. You got to keep it going. It's got to keep it. If it doesn't perpetuate itself, what's the point? What's the point of anything that we're doing? And that is why in 10 years, there will be another Indiana Jones.
Well, I just think the lesson here is go woke, go broke. one final thought. I loved that the Beatles needle drop that they used at the beginning of this movie was Magical Mystery Tour, a song you never hear being used. It's a forgotten song. It's not one of the go-to. So I love that. That's all I have to say about this movie. I think we're done. Thanks for listening. Subbeacon.com. Go check us out, become a patron, comment, and we'll talk to you next time. All right.
Oh man, I'm sorry that turned into such a bitch session, but
it's funny because I think we're actually out of the mainstream of viewer opinion on this. Not necessarily critical opinion, although.
What do you mean? But what is viewer opinion?
It got a B plus from CinemaScore. I think
that's
most
bad for a movie like this.
Yeah, it's better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Can I say I had some free time and I rewatched Raiders today.
Good movie.
It's so good, and it is so. I don't know how to put this into words, so you can cut this if you want. But like watching it and then thinking about what Dial of Destiny looked like, what it felt like. It's like there's been such a flattening. Like all movies feel the same now. Maybe it's because I see them all the time. Maybe this is how you feel about everything, Sonny. But like, this just felt like any other action movie. And it was just blah. No. And like Raiders had felt like, holy shit, this is the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen.
Because again, look, people, you can joke about me gushing over Steven Spielberg all you want. But here's the simple fact of the matter.
I'm not.
Here's the simple fact of the matter. James Mangold is a perfectly competent studio director. Like he gets in there, he does the job. It's competent. It's clear. But mm-hmm. He's not making inspiring filmmaking. When you look at something like Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, what you see is a whole series of sequences, one after the other, in which the camera is constantly in movement and right. not in ways that are just like shaky or random. They are planned out by Steven Spielberg in his head the day of the shot, usually. And he just like puts track down, he puts cameras down, and you go from corner to corner, boom, boom. We're doing there's the one scene where in Raiders of the Lost Ark where he is packing his suitcase. He's just packing his suitcase, right? And the camera it's almost a one-er. It's not quite a one-er because it cuts at one point to see him put the gun in the suitcase. But that whole sequence is a couple minutes long. And it's just Harrison Ford and what's his name?
Marcus
Brody talking about what it would mean to find the Ark, right? Like what it would actually mean. And Spielberg is just going around and around this room, just going all over the place. Camera's constantly in movement. We're constantly going from actor to actor. It feels real and vibrant and immediate. And it's not visually boring. I mean, like that is just the long and the short of it. All of this stuff is shot in front of green screens. It's all sliced together in the editing room. It's all one shot, two shot dialogue. It's just fucking boring to look at. And whatever you want to say about Temple of Doom, JBL, it's never boring to look at. There's not a boring shot in that film.
And for our bonus episode this week, we're going to do another 45 minutes on this fucking movie that we all hated.
I'm sorry. I had to compare it to the thing that I just saw, what I love, even though Temple remains my favorite. Like Raiders is perfect and it's just perfect. But also like nobody, but it's not just this movie, right? Like all movies feel bland.
Yes.
Let me give you one. I actually think that what we're suffering from begins in the Lucas prequels. So in the Lucas prequels,
which I just watched Attack of the Clones with my kids for the first time, and I noticed it here.
Rick, what's his face? Who's one of the EPs? Rick Berman, maybe.
Yeah, Rick Berman
says, you know, there's the famous line from the making of where he talks about, you know, every frame is so densely packed.
And it's so dense. It's he's Canadian. It's so dense.
Right, and the. Think about the airfield scene in Raiders where Indy's at the airfield and you've got like a couple planes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's practical and they're in an open space and they've got a couple planes. If that is done today, that airfield is going to have like 500 planes around. And
we have to have a CGI shot of all the planes.
CGI allows us to be all densely. Right. CGI allows us to densely pack everything. And if we do it practically, then the frames will look more empty. And so that's what everybody does instead of just doing it practically and doing it on location where it might look more empty, but it feels more visceral and more real.
Yep.
All right.
I'm sure
it's fine.